this is the last chapter, and this will just cover some various thoughts that I have about game utilities and just some other concepts related kind of to making a successful game utility and certain models that I consider for game utility design. So one of those things is what I consider what I call the participation activity frequency model. And so when designing these game utilities, it's important to note that the participation model, to make them engaging to all players at various parts of utilitarian needs. There are fun generators for various levels of participation, but it's important to keep in mind that not all the people will necessarily be creating or collaborating through all parts of the game. A solid design model has multiple fun generators that engage players at a passive level, active level, at a quick level, at a more longer level, etc., and embodies the mission of the game. So, for example, with that campus news game mentioned in another section of the book called Waddle, not everyone was meant to submit news. But there was a social stream that allowed players to passively engage with the data in a way that was fun and engaging. And that social stream was updated constantly, at least with the minimum amount of content based on the other players. Obviously, it would have been nice to have more content, but the concept is that you need to design things where people would love to check that data concept or interact with that data on a very highly frequent model. Because if you don't have that, people will not stick around for the longer type things, for the longer type interactions or sequences that might even be deeper or more meaningful for them. So at least for me, I see like one of the blind spots is that it's extremely difficult for me to come up with mechanics related to data that are easy, that are just immediate, that give immediate satisfaction. Now, we've seen some systems allow for this to happen, like with news, with the Reddit system. What's nice about news is that people naturally like to find out or read about other things or keep up on news. So as you design a model for your game, fun ways to browse the data within the game might be a quick way or a lower level of passive participation that can get people to quickly engage. It gives player content that keeps them engaged with the game utility and something that can be updated frequently. Ideally, you know, provided you have enough content. In addition to the participation models, there can be fun generators that create opportunities to engage in deeper levels of gameplay, provided you get the immediate aspects done properly. Because if you don't have something where people can immediately get feedback or interaction or fun or, you know, a sense of completion, just by spending like a few seconds, then they're gone. I think it's really going to be difficult to come up with something or to build on anything when you don't have the initial mechanic that's just immediately powerful set up. And so this is a flaw that I've seen in my previous game designs, when I've experimented with game utility prototypes. And that's where photo browsing, it's really immediate for a lot of people. So for example, with the Sticker Tycoon game, where people could browse, that's really easy to do and it's really fun. So I think, at least for me, I consider data content browsing as a quick way or an interesting way to keep people engaged, at least attractive. Now, you may come up with something else that's more engaging or interactive that's, you know, also immediate, and I encourage you to do so. But for me, what I've seen is that photo browsing is an easy and quick way to do things, to get people at least initially engaged to check out things. And you can add other item activities then on top of that basic immediate mechanic. And so the core loop, if we want to consider, if we use the concept of core loop or game vocabularies, might be just literally browsing photos, sharing or liking photos. And then you can build stuff on top of that that have lesser frequency, and maybe even deeper participation. But without that core immediate fun, it's done. You know, I feel like it doesn't work. And that immediate loop could literally be chat. I mean, I think since this is relatively a new field, browsing photos and even interacting with photos, as we've seen it with Tinder, they got that immediate mechanic right. And from that immediate mechanic, they could build deeper systems on top of it. So I think that's what I mean by participation activity and frequency models. And then, going more deeper into frequency models, it's that, you know, yes, there's participation, and that participation needs to be really easy to do up front. Then you can build on top of it later as people see the value. But the frequency of the utility also needs to be very powerful. It can have, like, you know, with the Waddle Campus Daily app, if it was just the Lost and Found for campus, that would be something that people would check maybe once every semester. And you needed something where people would check it every moment. And that's where, with people added other interesting content or made interesting comments or added photos about their events or even about themselves, this would be something that people would love to check out because they want to know about other people or meet other people on campus. You know, and that goes to designing frequency systems or data systems that have high levels of frequency that are fun and engaging. So the way I saw it is that I imagined a grid, and I call it the frequency activity participation blends. And it was a grid where in the top left corner would be the people, because you need the people to generate the data, or some system, you know, some content generation system. I consider people in this case. And then in the top right corner would be the roles and relationships. And then in the bottom left corner is the sharing, contribution, creation activities. And then in the bottom right corner was the frequency. And then if you blended them all, or, you know, you blended them all together, you would create emotions. And that that fun effect of game utilities. And so finding the right mix of activities and the right frequencies that align with people's natural human nature is the game utility designer's job. It's literally providing activities that provide innate and natural fun for players. So that was definitely one thing that I saw as a concept that needs to be considered for these game utilities. Now, another thing that needs to be considered is the concept of marketing and traction. Because as I mentioned before, at least with that Waddle Campus Daily app, there were not enough players to seed it. And without enough players on campus, there was just not enough data that helped to make it go viral. So this is where you need to consider kind of the pre-game phase, where you're building up your core player base to get that critical mass so that these data, the game systems or the fun generators actually work. Because just like electricity and electricity generators, if there's not enough juice, that electricity generator is not going to be powering, you know, giving you the power for the devices you need. So this is definitely another thing to consider. The goal is to make the game fun, and that requires users, right? Especially for a lot of these data generated games, it's really interacting with other players sometimes, at least at this point. And so that requires, a lot of these things will be multiplayer, that requires other people. And so it's critical to seed some of these, interactivity systems. You need to have enough players. So that's where traction is important. And I saw with, Waddle, the reason why it may have, there are probably other reasons, but one of the reasons for sure is that there were just not enough people to generate the news up front so that they would want to keep checking back and do keep checking back. And then with the Fun Friends dating utility, I noticed that it only really got to critical mass once it had 6,000 daily players. Once it had that, then it kind of developed these other things like a community culture, a game culture, and stuff like that. And that brings up the next thing to consider, which is community culture. Because most of these game utilities are data-generated games, you know, are social, there's a culture and energy that forms around them and about the game. And so when players enter the game, they feel this energy and emotion, and it may be one of the most addictive or unique elements of the game utility. So it's an important element, and the feedback and interactions in the game should help to cultivate and encourage the habits within the game that help develop the culture, protect the culture, promote the theme and the tone you want. So for the game designer, it's important to encourage these proactive participation elements to solidify player habits within the game. So some of these cultural aspects might literally be, like I said, with Fun Friends, you could buy a pet for your fun cage. And then in your fun cage, you would actually then do certain interactions, like kiss them or spank them or something silly. So it kind of promoted a fun culture inside the game. But also part of that culture needs to be moderating content that you don't find acceptable or kicking out content that would pollute or ruin the experience, removing bullies. I mean, these are things that happen in these multiplayer interactive systems, and it's up to you to decide whether you want them or you don't, because it'll determine the community culture that new players feel. And it's kind of like an invisible part of the game utility system that provides a flavor or style to your game. Okay, and then the other thing is I consider these game utilities kind of experience amplifiers and accelerators. And so previous game designs really focused on simulations, right? These would be emulating real world stuff. Whereas, so if people wanted to play a game about business, they would play a business simulation. And the difference here is that the game utilities would amplify or accelerate literally your business life. So this would be a way to amplify or accelerate certain life activities that people are doing. And that's what you have to consider, is that these game systems are overlaid on top of players' normal activities, or they literally provide alternative sequences to satisfy those activities. And so it's important to note that game amplifiers and accelerators are not diversions for doing actual work. It actually helps to amplify and accelerate the actual work. So I consider these things, one perspective to look at these things is like experience amplifiers and accelerators. And the other thing to keep in mind is that the reward needs to be the activity itself. The activity itself should be, you know, from the game utility, should be something that's not boring and people love to do it. It makes the base event fun. And then the future rewards offer newer, different, or amplified types of fun. But the point is that these game utilities are providing kind of fun paths to do certain things or things that people would normally want to do in their lives. And it starts with the concept of the reward happens as the player does the activity. It can't be like, you know, you do this painful thing and then the reward is at the end. It needs to really be blended inside the loops of the activities, the sub-activities themselves. And so traditional games allow for agency, and with these utilities, we combine agency, you know, the concept of agency within games, with data so that players could create meaningful choices. And these fun generators and experiences they help to amplify and accelerate life, you know, choices in life. And then they also make certain choices accessible, going back to that photo booth where you could make a game utility that allows people to track progress of a certain thing or even their life or their, you know, just how they've aged over the course of a year. So by integrating fun and interactivity into the flow, it can lower the barrier of certain activities, and it can overcome friction of doing important and valuable and fun and meaningful things for players. And then there's also the concept of game polish. Now, in traditional games, game polish would be you have to get the controls right, you have to get this right and that right. And yes, there's definitely parts of that, but what's interesting about the game polish here is that because most of the content is data-generated or user-generated, the polish revolves around intangible things like the speed of displaying the user-generated content or the data-generated content when players need to browse. Because we talked about that browsing mechanic being kind of a gateway entry system to participate in the game utility in a quick and effective way for situations where players don't have a lot of time. And so the speed of loading the data, the size of the content, in the case of photos, the quality of the photos versus the size. So these meta characteristics represent polish for a data-generated game because the content itself would not really be something that is necessarily professional. It might be meaningful, but it's not professional. So to say like you need to have the perfect lighting for everyone's photos, I mean, that's not what you need to consider for polish. I think it's really loading and the gameplay systems need to be smooth. There should not be hiccups from loading the data. And some of these things are issues. Given, you know, the fact that still a lot of the tools to process data and everything else are being developed. And that goes into last thing to consider, which are the practical tools for these game utilities. And really, it's a blend of technologies that revolve around traditional game engines, but also other concepts. So, you know, you have traditional game engines like Corona for mobile and then Unity, of course, and then Godot, which is kind of this up-and-coming indie game engine. Those are very useful and they help with kind of like the visual feedback for the players. But then you also have these big data tools you need to consider. There's Amazon AWS and EC2 and, you know, CloudFront. And these are CDNs, content delivery networks, so that the data for the games can be delivered more quickly, so that the polish for the games are more effective because the data loads more quickly. There's stuff like Hadoop and Mahout and Spark. And these are things that help with pre-computation, maybe for data or concepts that are needed for some of these game utility systems. And yeah, and then there's S3, which is obviously, which is another Amazon S3 or Amazon's AWS service, where it can load your images or your data more quickly. So you don't have to be concerned about how fast the data is loading. But these are subtle things that really can hurt or help your game utility. So that's it. I know this is incomplete. I wrote this a long time ago, but I definitely wanted to get this out. And if you have any comments or feedback or suggestions, let me know. If you need any clarifications, let me know. If you want to mention anything else, feel free to let me know, post in the comments below, or you can email support@indiegamepod.com. So that's it. So game utilities are an exciting and emerging area of game design. As new data sources emerge and interactivity becomes ubiquitous, this will be a great area to explore and prototype. I wish everyone the best of luck. Thank you for checking this out and the opportunity. Take care.